Okay, this is Dolores Cannon again. And the last show, I was talking about some of my cases that I have done, and I wanted to continue with those. I hope I'm not going to do any repetition, because it's been a while since I did that show, and I hope I'm not going to repeat some of the cases I did at that time. But I do want to remind you that my work is done with hypnosis, and I'm a past life therapist. And I've done thousands and thousands of cases in the last 30 years, so I've been able to come up with some theories and information that the average hypnotist would never find. And this is where I'm finding the connection between what's going on in the human body with connections in past lives, but also things that happen in this life are connected, and they call illnesses, they cause illnesses and diseases. And that's what I do in my work, is to try to alleviate these by making the connection. So I said last week, I work directly with the subconscious mind. And the subconscious, to me, you may call it the oversoul, the higher self, the higher consciousness. It is the part that has all of the information and all of the knowledge. And when I do my work, we contact that part through everybody I work with. So to me, it's like calling up an old friend on the phone, because it's amazing to be able to contact the same part through anyone I work with, and it always has the same type of voice. It always speaks the same, uses the same terminology. And to do that time and time again, there, I think that would be proof that there is definitely something else out there that we are in contact with, because these are people that I have sessioned with everywhere. None of them know what I'm looking for. I don't give them any clues when we start the session. I just tell them we will be talking to the subconscious, which has the answers to the problems. I call it the subconscious, and whatever it is answers to that, but it is much, much larger than the psychiatric explanation for the subconscious. It is so powerful that we can have instantaneous cures, alleviation of disease and phobias and allergies, all kinds of things, because once the person understands what's causing it, on that level, it goes away immediately. This is what is so fascinating about this work, that I think I've discovered something that the average hypnotist doesn't use or don't know about. Of course, everything that we're doing now, we have done in the past, in other lifetimes, whenever they had great knowledge and great power in the other civilizations. They keep saying, when I say they, I mean the subconscious part, I've got to know them as they. They keep saying, we are not uncovering anything new. We are just remembering what we did in the past. We are bringing back lost knowledge and lost information from other civilizations that we have all lived in. And that is what I am doing, tapping into these parts. I'm finding this through many, many people, that many of them are coming to me now who either are healers or they want to be healers. And they're working in this field. I see it as almost like an undercurrent, an underground. The average person, and I think the medical community, has no idea of what is really out there and what we are tapping into. That's why I call it the undercurrent, the underground. Because there are so many people having this sudden desire to get into these fields. They're taking Reiki, they're taking all the different energy work courses, and eventually they all find their own way. They all find their own technique. That's what it's all about. I say you take all of the courses, get all the information, and then develop what is natural for you to develop. However it feels right, I don't think there's any rules or regulations about what is right and what is wrong. If it helps people, and we found how to use this energy in some way, that is the most important thing. I'm also finding people all over the world who are getting involved in energy work and healing, and the natural alternative healing. I'm finding all over the world they're either opening centers, building centers, or planning centers of healing. So this is not a coincidence when I hear so many people doing this. If even half of these places that I'm hearing about come into reality, it's going to have a tremendous effect on the health of the world, the belief systems of the world, and it's definitely going to have a tremendous effect on the medical profession. When I was in Russia in May, I was in Moscow for the first time because my books are being translated there now, and they want me to come back next March. When I was there, I was sent for and taken to this center where there were doctors and psychiatrists working on the application of folk medicine in Russia. They told me this was very important, that they are trying to unite the healers of the world. They said it would be similar to Doctors Without Borders, only they're calling it Healers Without Borders. They want to unite all the people working in the alternative field, as many as they can, and the herbal medicines, the natural remedies. And they said they don't want any fakes or any charlatans, but they want anyone who is involved in the natural medical field to be a part of this organization. And they asked me if I would help to get this started in the United States, to be a part of this. So this is something I'll be working on as we go into the future. I'll be working with these people in Russia to hopefully we can get this off the ground, because they said they have very powerful connections with people who want to sponsor this everywhere. And the doctor who in charge gave me a very interesting statistic. He said, according to the 2000 year statistics, over 42% of Americans believed in alternative medicine and were using alternative medicine. It means homeopaths, naturopaths, herbal remedies, whichever way you want to do it. 42% were using this and believed in it. And I told him, well, that's not what we hear in the States. They run it down. They try to make it as though it's in the backwaters. It's nothing very important, very big, and they're always trying to run down different herbal remedies that actually help the person more than the drugs. I said, that's what we hear. We don't ever hear that it being that much of a percentage. He said, well, these are the 2,000 statistics that he's going by. And when I travel, I find they know a lot more of what's going on in the world in these other countries than we do right here in the United States. When the news is on over there, I hear things that we never hear in the States, of events that we are involved in. And when I come back, I'll tell my kids, I'll say, did you hear about thus and such? And they'll say, what do you mean? There wasn't anything on the news at all. Well, they are getting the real news. Our news is being censored and doctored to where we will only get what they want us to know. So there's a whole lot of other things going on in the world that the people who don't travel and the people who just only exposed to what they get on the news and in the newspapers, there's a whole lot more happening than they'll ever be aware of. But I have doctors now coming to me for as clients, and many of them are saying they want to get into the alternative healing. They are tired of the drugs, and they know it's not as effective as they want it to be. They would much rather get over into the field where they know these cures have been around for thousands and thousands of years, and this is what they want to get into, to get over into the alternative healing. One doctor said he got tired of signing death certificates because he said once they put the person on chemo, that was signing their death certificate. But he knew that if they survived at all, it would be in spite of it. And he said you couldn't very well put the cause of death on the death certificate as chemotherapy. You had to put something else. But, and I hope I'm not causing any problems by saying these things, I was told we could talk about absolutely anything we wanted to talk about when I do these shows, that this is an open forum, even though it's not going to give very popular ideas, that we could say anything we want. Because I have many doctor friends, and I respect them. I know they're only doing what they are taught, but many of them are beginning to question it and move over to the other fields. Because they said there's only two ways to treat cancer, for instance, and this is with chemo and radiation. In the natural health field, there's over 200 ways of treating different cancers. Why not use these? It's going to be much better for the body anyway. And then, as I said in the last few weeks in my work, I have found a lot of cancers are caused by the emotions, by stress, and by holding things inside. I think I talked about that last week, that people hold anger, they hold resentment, they hold very powerful emotions, and there's a lot of karma involved too, but they hold these inside and won't let them go. They won't release them. All they have to do really is just to forgive and let it go, let it go. But some people have a very difficult time with that. And eventually all of these emotions and tensions and stress start eating away at the body. So there's many other ways besides the regular medical treatments that we've heard of. But I'm not encouraging anyone to go against what their doctors say. I'm going to have a doctor who's going to be on my program in a few weeks when I get back from the Middle East, and he talks about how the mind can affect the body. He said, if you believe your doctor is helping you, if you believe the medicine is helping you, then that is all right, because it's your mindset, it's your belief system, it's what is curing you and healing you anyway, is the mindset. So if you believe in the hospitals and the doctors and the medicine, then that's right for you. But actually, you are doing the healing yourself, because it's a very natural part of the body and the mind. A lot of doctors have told me they know they are just helping the person while the body heals itself and while the person heals itself. People just don't realize how powerful their minds are and how much their minds do influence their body. Well, I didn't mean to get off on a lot of that. But I do want to go into some more of the cases that I've found now. And the cases I've been giving in the last week and this week are only a very small portion of what I have found in my work. I keep finding something new every time I work with someone, especially when someone comes to me and says, the doctors say they have thus and such disease, and then we find out what's causing it. And it is so simple that the person does it to themselves. This is not consciously. They don't do it on purpose. People will say, well, I don't want to be sick. But they are doing it to their body for some reason. And we find out why the subconscious is trying to get the person's attention. Why is it, what's it trying to tell the person? Then it will go away. So this is a very powerful form of therapy. And I'm leaving for the Middle East tomorrow. These shows will be broadcast while I'm gone. And I will be teaching my class in Dubai, which is in the Middle East. It's in the United Arab Emirates. I've been teaching the class now in the United States and all over the world. I had a class in England in May. And next year in March, I'll be teaching a class in Holland. So I'm hoping to spread this technique as far as I can, and the students I've had are saying they are having the same remarkable results. Apparently we have found something that has been unknown, forgotten, whatever you want to say. We have forgotten, we have just lost this ability for the mind to help the cure the body, and maybe now we're getting it back. And what I discovered in my work may be the first step of it, that in time we will all be able to heal our bodies with our minds. and there won't be any illness anymore. This is the way it was in the days of Atlantis. No one was sick because they knew how to work with the body and the mind. And that's what I've been told in my work. We are getting all of these things back. They're all coming back now. We're being allowed to have these powers and talents back. There are many people who have come to me who want to restore lost knowledge and talents. They somehow know they had this information, they had this ability in times past, and they want to regain it. They want to bring it back into their lives now. And, like, for instance, there are people who are painters, sculptors, artists, and they know at some other time they must have been an artist. They want to see if that's there, even musicians. They want to see if that ability is there. And if it is there, if they've had it from another life, maybe they can bring it back in this life and enhance their work. Because I found anything we have ever learned, any talent, any ability, any knowledge we learned in other lifetimes is not lost. It did not perish with the death of that physical body. It remained. And all of that knowledge and that information and those abilities were stored in the subconscious mind, just like storing it into a gigantic computer bank. And if it is appropriate, if it is possible to use it in this life, it can be tapped into and brought back. It has to be appropriate, because maybe it's not what you're supposed to do this time. Maybe you were a famous artist or a famous composer in another life, and you did that. You learned that, and you don't need it now. Then it's not advisable to bring that back. This is what I always talk about. If it's appropriate to your life now, if you learn these things in another life, they can be brought back. I've had it happen many times. People have tapped into artistic abilities, musical abilities, and the subconscious is like a sensor or a mentor there, and it will not allow anything to happen that you are not ready for or anything that will not be for your highest good. So if we do find a life where somebody had musical abilities and it says, no, it is not advisable to bring that back at this time, then if it's not appropriate, then I can't do anything about that. I cannot override what the subconscious says. Well, it knows best. It knows which way the person's life is supposed to go this time. Maybe you've done it. There's no need to repeat it again. Maybe the way the life is supposed to go this time around is down a different road, a different way. And if that is true, then we won't bring these abilities back. But I had a doctor come to me. He was in internal medicine. And he said he was doing his job, but he kept feeling there was something more. That at another time, somehow, he knew that he had more information, he had more knowledge, that he could heal in a different way. And he thought if only he could tap into that, he could help his patients a lot more. He had taken several healing group classes, like remote viewing and different Reiki and different classes where they teach you to see inside the body. He'd taken a lot of this, knowing there must be something else out there that was missing from the traditional medicine. But he said he hadn't found it yet, so he wanted to see if maybe it was from a past life, maybe he could have that knowledge back. When we took him back into the past life, he went into a lifetime where he was like a shaman. A medicine man. He took care of the people in the tribe, I guess you would say, the group that he lived in. And he had the remarkable ability in that lifetime to see inside the body. He could see when something was wrong with the body, and he was able to manipulate psychically with psychic hands, I guess you would say, not your physical hands. He was able to manipulate the organs, the muscles, whatever was wrong with the person, he could see inside and he could manipulate it. There were no deformities in that tribe. There were no major diseases because they knew how to prevent this by the use of their minds and by the use of being able to see inside the body. Often what we consider to be primitive tribes had these abilities. So we're the ones that are more primitive, I guess, if you want to break it down like that. But he had the ability to do this, and he helped a great deal of people in his group. He wanted to pass this knowledge on to others to follow him, but he never was able to completely train someone to take his job. But he had this ability to put his hands inside the body and manipulate the organs, very much like the psychic surgeons do today. And some of these are real. They're not all fake. There are some of these that are real. But whenever the doctor woke up, the one image that stayed in his mind was being able to see inside the body and being able to put his psychic hands into the body and to manipulate the organs. He said, I know what it feels like. It's cold and wet. And he said, I'll be able to use this. The patient doesn't have to know what he's doing. He'll just be able to give better care by being able to see inside the body and see what was really wrong with it. So in that case, he was allowed to have this lost knowledge back because he would be able to use it in this time period now. Well, one thing I want to say before I forget about it, these psychic surgeons are real, is because I had another doctor who came to me. I'd known him for a while because I'd had other contacts with him. He came to me for a session. He said about once a month he goes down to Brazil, and there is a very famous psychic surgeon down there called John of God. Many of you have probably heard of this man. And this doctor goes down there about once a month and spends time with this John of God. And he's so engrossed in this that the doctor even built a house down there so he would have a place to stay when he goes down. He said there would be long lines of people waiting to come in and see John of God. And this doctor would sit right next to him every time he goes down there to help him and to watch the proceedings. He said there was absolutely no way there could be any fraud. And he saw this John of God do many miraculous things. So I know a lot of people keep saying it's magic tricks and they've tried to discredit these people. But it shows it is real in some cases. Not every case, but in some cases it is real. And they are able to use this long-lost knowledge that our ancestors had and that we had in other lifetimes. They're able to bring this back and use it now. So these things are real. But that was one case I had where the doctor wanted to bring back information he knew instinctively he had in his subconscious mind. Another one was a woman who was into herbs and oils. And she went back to a lifetime where in ancient Greece, where she was someone who worked with ancient, with oils and herbs. She knew all of the plants, knew their uses, knew how to use them, had a great deal of knowledge. Well, as I said, that knowledge does not disappear with the death of the body. It is stored in this computer part of you. And so when she had that information, so the subconscious said she would be allowed to bring that information, the knowledge of all the plants and all the herbs and their uses and their preparation. She would be allowed to bring that information into this life so she could help with her own practice. But I said, how was she going to know which ones? Because they were known by different names in that time than they are in our time. The subconscious told her to go to the library or the bookstore and to get a book that had pictures of all of the plants and all of the flowers and all of the plants. And when she would see the picture, it would trigger the memory. And it would bring it back into her mind because they are known by different names than they were in the ancient Grecian times. It would trigger in her mind what the plant was used for and how to prepare and how to use it. So to me, this is very valuable when you can tap into these ancient lost knowledge and talents and bring them back into our lifetime now to utilize them. This is some of the things I've done. People come to me for all kinds of reasons. Many of you have probably had cases of deja vu where you have been somewhere and you have the feeling you've been there before. And there's many documented cases of this. And sometimes you're never sure. Maybe it is a case of reincarnation, that maybe you were there in another lifetime and it's triggering a lost memory. I had two cases of this. I'm sure there's many, many more. I've had it happen with people, especially when they go to Europe. Because, you know, in Europe, they don't tear something down. You can still walk the streets of towns that are hundreds and hundreds of years old. You could go into old cathedrals that have been sitting there for 700, 800 to 1,000 years. These places have remained the same for hundreds of years. In America, if something is 100 years old, we tear it down and make a parking lot out of it. But over there, the person can walk down the street or go into an ancient cathedral, an ancient building, and be overcome by these feelings of, I've been here before. One man said when he walked into a certain cathedral in England, he began crying. He had a lot of emotion, and he couldn't figure out why. But it was very likely he had walked back into a place that he had lived in another lifetime. Many of you have had these experiences, even though you don't believe in reincarnation, the feeling of deja vu, like I've been here before, I've done this before, and it's all very familiar. But I had one man that came to me as a client who it happened to him in Egypt by the pyramids. And he had had no desire to go to Egypt. He didn't even have much of an interest in it. But he was over in Europe on vacation, and his relatives said they had some tickets. They wanted to take him to Egypt to see the pyramids as part of his trip. And like I said, he wasn't really that interested in it. But when he got there, and they were with all the tourists, the what's called the Giza Plateau is right in front of the pyramids, which is packed with tourists and people. There were busloads of people in the buses sitting all over the place. And he was with his wife, and they'd gone off, and he was trying to catch up with them. He was walking across the Giza Plateau. I think that's the name of the place. I haven't been there yet. I probably will be soon. He was walking across the plateau toward the pyramid when all of a sudden it was as though he stepped through a time portal or he stepped through some kind of a time barrier. And he was there at the time the pyramids were being built when they were new. And he was overcome with emotion. It was just a strange feeling. It was like, I'm home, I'm home. And I wrote about this story in my book, Convoluted Universe, Book 1, where I was talking about the building of the pyramids and the ancient mysteries. But he was overcome with emotion of, even though it didn't look like it did today, is I'm here, I'm home. Well, then it only lasted for a short period of time, and when he took the next step, all of a sudden, all of the noise and everything came rushing back in. And there were all the people and the buses that were there. It was no longer an empty plateau. And his wife came running up to him because they'd been separated. She didn't know where he was. She came running up to him, and he said he was standing there crying. And she couldn't figure out why. And he said, because I went home. So that's a case of deja vu where it triggered a very powerful event to where he actually stepped through and went back into that time period. Another woman who came to me happened in the United States, which is usually unusual, like I said, because we don't have things that are that old here. It happened down in Fort Smith, Arkansas, about 50 miles from where I live. There's a famous old courthouse and prison down there. It has to do with a famous hanging judge, Parker, who hung a lot of people during the Civil War and right after the Civil War. It's a very infamous place, and now they have a museum there. But this woman came to me because she had had this fear of having her hands bound and of she couldn't sleep all night. She was waking up about every hour on the hour for many years. She couldn't sleep. And this feeling of claustrophobia, of being closed in, she couldn't stand any of that. And she wanted to know where this was coming from. But she said she'd had a strange experience when she went to Fort Smith. This is before coming to me. She had gone to Fort Smith to see this museum and the famous old prison. And she said when she was in the museum, she knew there was something underneath that floor, that there were cells down there and there had been people down there. And that was all she could find out. They had pictures in the museum of the famous people. She said the one picture of Judge Parker didn't trigger anything, but one of the pictures of the hangmen that were there, that made her very emotional. There was something about it that was very familiar. So when we did her session, she went back there, and it was during the Civil War. And they were the Confederates, and some of these men had been captured, and they were being held prisoner there in the jails. And she was someone who really didn't want to go to war. She just went because everybody else was doing it, and she joined the crowd. It wasn't because of belief systems or anything. She just joined up and went with the rest of them. So here she was. They had captured them, and they took them into a dungeon-like situation. Some of them were tied to the walls with chains, and they were so crowded in there, very claustrophobic area with little tiny windows, and it was dark and damp and very depressing with all these people, and they were extremely frightened. And, you know, because many of these were hanged without any kind of a trial, really. And they were all crowded into this area underneath there. And naturally, you're not going to be able to sleep crowded together like that, some of them being chained to the walls, only a few cots. There are just so many people there. And then also the fear must have been raw all night long, because they all knew something was going to happen. They were all terrified, so naturally they weren't going to be able to sleep. And this was what happened. The next day, many of them were taken out and hung. And she was one of the men who were taken out and hung. And this was what this feeling of deja vu when she went back there was, that I know this place, I know there's cells underneath this building. But during the session, part of the reason for bringing this memory back was that the subconscious wanted to tell her, you don't have to follow the pack anymore. You don't have to do what everybody else is doing. Just because they're doing it doesn't mean you have to. You can be your own person, and you can stand up for what you believe in and what you want to do. That's what it was trying to tell her, because her life had been going down that way. She was not standing up for herself. She was just doing what everybody else was wanting her to do. So those were two cases I had of deja vu. And, of course, those were only very few of the ones that I've done. And some of you may identify with that because you have been to places where you have had these similar feelings of, I know I've been here before. There's something very familiar about this. I get so many emails and so many phone calls that people, many of them say, I've got such a strange story to tell you, I can't tell anybody else because they're going to think I'm crazy. But they can tell me because they know I won't be judgmental. And I tell them, there isn't anything you can tell me that I will think is strange because I feel I've heard it all. Very, very weird things. But as soon as I say that, I think I've heard it all, well, then I get something else that's new and different. So I can't say I know it all. I just try to put it into place. And with my new books, The Convoluted Universe, I'm getting so many strange theories that I know I've only touched the surface in these things. Okay, let me go into a few more cases that were different and unusual. One was a woman who came to me who lost her sense of smell. She lost it when she was a child, and she'd never been able to smell anything since then. So we were trying to find out what happened with that. She went back to a lifetime where she was one of these healers. You know, in those old days, there were many, many of these. I think every village, every place had their granny woman. They had their, what was called witches. They had people that worked with oils and herbs, as well as the tribes that had their shamans and medicine men. This was an accepted part of life. But in many of those times, they made one mistake, and then they were either burned at the stake, or they were hung, or they were killed in some way. Because although they needed these people, they were not very tolerant of them, because they had a fear of them, because they knew they could do harm as well as good. And so many of these people were feared. And I've had many, many cases where they were burned or hung or killed in various ways. Then, when they come back in this life and they have this interest in reviving that, they know they have an interest in metaphysical knowledge, they know they have an interest in herbs and oils, but they're afraid, and they don't know why they're afraid. It's because they were killed for having this knowledge in another life. And even though now we know they're not going to be killed for it, it's actually all coming back. Still, in that part of their mind, there's a fear, and that's what I have to deal with and take away so they'll be able to pursue what they're really looking for. Well, this woman went back to a life to where she was one of these women in this village. She lived out in the woods, and she would go out in the woods and gather the herbs and gather the roots to make her potions. And she had big pots cooking all the time that smelled awful of all of these ingredients she put together. And there were lines of people that were coming constantly to get these different potions. And they were very effective. But she was so tired of this. And she especially was so tired of the smell of the pots boiling and all of the things that were in them, that she was very glad when she got out of that life. She said, now I'm not going to have anything to do with that anymore. I don't want it. She had no desire to bring it back into this life. So it was fine until she was about 5 years old, and her grandmother came to visit with her. And she had a cold, and some of the other ones, the children in the house, had a cold. Her grandmother was cooking up a potion, an old-time remedy, on the stove of different natural ingredients from the old-timers. I know my grandmother used to use camphor a lot and was very effective against sore throats and colds. But her grandmother was preparing something on the stove, and the pot was boiling, and the smells were going all over the house. That's when the little girl lost her sense of smell. It was the association between that and the unpleasant life she had, where she was more or less trapped into a situation that she didn't like. She associated the two things together, the two smells, and it took away her sense of smell in this lifetime. Well, then I had to do a lot of work with the subconscious memories to allow her sense of smell to come back. Because I always say, this happened in the past. It's from the past, it belongs in the past, and we leave it in the past. We only bring it forward as a curiosity to help with and to learn knowledge from. But it belongs back there. All of these things belong with the other body. It does not belong with this body and this personality. And there's no reason to carry it over into this life. And once we have done that, then the subconscious agrees, yes, you're right. They don't have to bring it over in this life. They don't need it anymore. So it would be wonderful for her to be able to smell things, to be able to smell food cooking, to be able to smell flowers in the garden. So it agreed to allow it to come back. So sometimes the reason for things are not exactly what the doctors think they are. There was a whole lot of more. There's a whole lot of different things that we can't grasp with our normal reasoning minds anyway. Let me give a few cases of asthma that I've encountered. Many times, asthma comes from lifetimes where a person died of suffocation, of something with the lungs, maybe different, and maybe even sandstorms, places once where they couldn't breathe. If anything dealing with a death of that type would cause asthma in this present lifetime. You would probably be able to think of many of these because the death experience is so traumatic that sometimes it leaves a carryover, a residue that is brought forth into this life. And often it's not needed, but it does create physical problems. So I had this one friend. He was another doctor. I seem to associate with a lot of these doctors. But this was a doctor who now is a very good friend of mine. Because now, for many years now, anytime I have medical questions for my work, I can call him and ask him questions about it, because I'm always doing a lot of research on my books. I can't go to the local doctor and ask him some of these questions, because you want to know, why do I want to know? And it's a little hard to explain to the average person that I'm dealing in reincarnation and I need this medical information to go along with my work. Well, this man knows me because I've worked with him. And so he's like my medical consultant, and I call him when I have any questions. Well, I first met him when he came to me. He said he had asthma, and he was using the inhalators, and he didn't want to do that because he knew that the inhalators could become habit-forming, and they were really defeating the purpose. He said he had an idea that it came from past lives, and he wanted to find out what was causing it. Thought that would be a much safer way of handling it than to keep taking the medications. So we took him back into a past life, and he was a native running around in the jungle. Now, these natives were being captured and taken underground to work in the asbestos mines. And when I did research later, I found out that the French in Africa had a lot of these asbestos mines underground. And they would capture the natives and use them as slave labor in the mines. And he was one of these natives that had been captured and taken down there. And it was a very horrible situation, cramped conditions, and they were working to where they were breathing this asbestos. Well, he began to notice that some of the people, the other men, began to develop symptoms. They would breathe this asbestos in, and it would irritate the lungs till finally they would begin bleeding from the nose and the mouth, and eventually they would die. When they would, the people who were running the mines would take them outside back into the jungle and leave their bodies out in the jungle, and then they would capture someone else to bring them underground to continue the work. So he saw this happening, but he was in a situation where there was no way out. So before long, he began to notice the symptoms appearing in his own body, from the breathing of this material that was in the air. And in his culture, it was not wrong to commit suicide if you were in a situation that you couldn't get out of. So he took a stake, a wooden stake, and he drove it into his right shoulder, below, between the shoulder and the chest. He drove the stake into his body and killed himself. He got out of the situation in that way. Well, when he got to the subconscious, it said this had carried over to where any time he was in a situation of stress in his present lifetime, these symptoms would appear with the breathing symptoms, and it would bring this back. And that was what was causing the asthma. So then I had to work with him on this to relieve it because, as I said, it belongs to the other body, the body that died way back then. It belonged to that body, and it did not belong to the body he is in now. So as I work with the subconscious in this manner, then it agrees, all right, we can take it away. It's no longer necessary. So when he woke, and we were talking about it, he said, I always wondered why occasionally I have pains in that part of my body between my shoulder and my chest, and that it was the exact spot he was rubbing was where he had driven the stake in. Well, many of these cases I don't have ways of checking up on. But because I see this man occasionally whenever I go out to where he his area and I do conferences, I do get to see him, and so we become friends. So one of the last times I saw him, we were all having dinner together, and it had been about 2-3 years since we'd had the sessions, and I asked him, well, by the way, how is your asthma? And he said, oh, that's right. I used to have asthma, didn't I? So it had gone away to where he didn't even notice it. He didn't even pay any attention to it anymore. So that, to me, is proof. It goes away because it's no longer necessary. And we can just take it away, any of these things, when they're no longer necessary. I've had several people who have come to me that have this great sense of sadness. It's as though they, I hear this all the time. They say, I don't belong here. I'm not from here. I don't want to be here. I don't like the violence here. I'm just very sad and depressed. I hear this a lot. Now, there can be many reasons for this. Some of it, as I will go into in the weeks to come, could be the star children who have volunteered to come. But that's a different situation, and I will be covering that in the future talks. But these two or three here that I do want to bring up that came from something else. One was a woman I did in Singapore. And, you know, in Singapore, they don't have access to as much metaphysical literature as we do. There are not a whole lot of books allowed in that country, and there's not too many metaphysical speakers. They just don't have the access to it. So you can't say she's making this up. But she said all her life she had this deep, deep sadness and sense of loss. And she said her parents said they didn't have any pictures of her smiling at all. She had always been very sad-looking all of her life. Well, she went back to a lifetime where she watched the destruction of her planet. She was from another planet, another time, and she had been on a spaceship, and they had come back, and they were orbiting the planet, and she went down to see, try to find her friends and her home. Everything had been totally destroyed, like there was some kind of war or something, but everything was in ruins, and she was totally shocked. It left a lasting impression on her because she lost everything. Then she went back to the orbiting spaceship, and everything was operated by the mind, and she could hardly even get back in because her mind was so distraught. But the sense of seeing everything gone her family, her friends, her home, and knowing she could never go back there again, made her bring forth this deep sense of sadness in this lifetime, because this planet apparently was not her home, not the one she wanted to go back to. And I also had this happen, another person who was in an orbiting spaceship, and he watched as his home planet blew up. So here it was again, the destruction of something, you can never go home again. Many of them are looking for that. They say, I want to go home, but I don't know where home is. I just know it's not here. Then I had another woman who had this deep sense of sadness. We found out that she was supposed to have been a twin. She was supposed to have had another soul. They had made an agreement. We'll come back together. We will be together in this next life. You won't have to do it alone. A lot of times you do this. You come back with other people, and there is this great feeling of, well, you know, we want to be together. We like to be together. And when it got ready to come, the other soul changed its mind and decided it didn't want to come this time. It was too late. The one that I was speaking to was already going on the return visit and was inside the body and being born. So it was like she felt deserted by the other soul, the one who was supposed to be with her and to accompany her into this life. It was a deep sense of sadness because she was supposed to be a twin. I think we're about running out of time here now. I had many others of these. I will try to continue with these in the next show, and that should take me through the time I'm going to be gone. By the time we go through this next show, I should be back from the Middle East, and I will have a lot of things to talk about then, and that will be a live show, and I'll be doing live shows from that time on. So the next show, I'll go over with some more of my cases. When I do the live shows, then we'll have call-ins. Well, people will begin to ask questions. Maybe by that time, you'll have a better idea of what I do and what I write about. But I want to give out my 800 numbers and the way you can contact us through our website for information about the books and about anything that I'm talking about and any future authors that I'm going to have on. Because I have my own publishing company, and we have many, many authors. We will be interviewing many of these. But if you want to call, the number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. Our website is, the name of the company is Ozark Mountain Publishing. So we have that abbreviated on our website. It is www.ozarkmt.com, the abbreviation for mountain, Ozark Mountain, ozarkmt.com. So long till next time.